Good morning. I am fine. I sort of like this cooler fall weather.
Well, that's what fall should feel like.
You have pretty sweaters, and you were all dressed up nicely last night, so I can see why you would like that.
Well, somebody had to dress up so that they could keep their chin up. Because last night...
Well, I heard you had to wear a bulletproof vest. Is that true?
Right, just about.
The knives were out after you? Well, why is that? Just because you're the only Republican? They hard on you at these meetings? Are they tough?
Well, I wanted to make sure I had on my red Republican color. No, actually, last night was the first of two meetings that we are required by the Indiana Code to have annually and have it by a certain time. The Indiana Code says that the annual county fiscal body meeting, it tells us exactly how it's supposed to happen, and it makes it clear that once we receive the information for the budgets that we're putting together for the following year, that's what we've been working on now for several months, so that's the very reason why we have a county council. It states very clearly that each ordinance must be read on at least two separate days. Can't even read it twice on the same day. It has to be two separate days before its final adoption.
So that's not opinion, that's law.
That's the Indiana Code, yes.
Okay.
That's the law. So it's not open to interpretation as far as I can see. When you read the Indiana Code, it should be very clear to everybody that's what you do. And so last night was our first reading, and then tonight will be the second reading, in order to make it according to what the Indiana Code. Now, it appeared that there were some that believed that we could sort of work around that and just have one meeting, as long as I would vote in favor with everybody. But if I didn't, well, it would require two meetings. Well,
that's not how the law works.
That was my take on it, and I read to you just what the law said. So it may be that others believe differently, but we've never done it yet. So I understand, just because you've always done something doesn't always make it the right way to do it. So that's the reason why we have the Indiana Code, to help direct us to do it the right way. And it's my opinion we should not be trying to work
around. Well, what if you don't follow the code? What's the big deal?
Yes, there's reasons why that's been in place for decades. So I'm grateful that they opted to go ahead and have the two meetings, because I would have had to just not go to the meeting. I wasn't going to be forced to vote in favor of something just to avoid a second meeting. That's just not, that wasn't acceptable to me. And so I appreciate the my council colleagues who agreed that that would not be an appropriate thing to do. And so I appreciate that very much.
So you move on to tonight's meeting and what goes on there.
Right. So tonight, since it's all required to be read twice, it will be read all over again. That will be every one of the tax rates, every one of the amount of taxes that we're charging local folks, and also all of the budgets that would be not even a part of the state's review. It's still all of those budgets will be read into the law so that we can vote everything up yes or no. And that would also include the salary ordinances. Now, you may say, well, who cares about any of that? But it's your dollars we're spending. And the reason why they're saying it has to have the two meetings and everything has to work in a certain way is so the public has the absolute knowledge and expectation of knowing what we're doing. And it's part of being open and transparent. And so at that meeting tonight will also be read in the salary ordinance again. However, it appears that there's a lot of salary ordinances that are going to be changed before the year ends, because there were several pages there of different salaries being requested, one of which was coming out of the treasurer's office. And, you know, we've had these problems with the treasurer being able to get her cash balanced. But there is a request to increase that pay of the person who does that job and move it up from $32,995 up to $38,375.
Is that because they're doing such a good job, Marty?
Well, I'm just saying that's what I'm reading.
What is the justification? If they can't do the job now, why are we...
It's bigger than a cost of living.
Wait, just a minute. I'm reading, it's on two pages, so I want to make sure I've got the right page. No, that one was the auditors. Here's the one for the treasurer. These are all these pages I'm looking at. The financial cash book person will be moved, is requesting to be moved from $35,793, that's for this year, up to $40,286 for that midpoint financial cash manager.
I'm looking at all this going, okay, we can't get the cash balance. We had to have somebody come in here to the tune of $150,000 and fix what was going on between the auditor and the treasurer's offices. And now we're giving raises to people in both offices because why? I mean, you're just going to be spending $150,000 in two more years to get it all redone anyway. So why would we give those offices one more penny?
Well, I understand your angst over this, and I share it. I do believe that we have some good county employees. If they are trained properly and given the opportunity that they can turn this around.
Fine. Once they show that they are doing a good job, you give them a raise. But you don't give people a raise before they do a good job. I mean, I'm sorry.
Here's the thing. If you have a department head who is holding somebody back, I'm not saying that's the case, but if it is the case, then do you penalize the person who is having the job? Now, we sent all of this off to our consultants, Wagner, Irwin, Shealy, and they came back with this suggested amount, part of which said if we are going to require them to have additional education. And so we'll see how this turns out. This is now, it was supposed to be voted on last night. And I really said, look, our agenda is so long. We have way too many things on this agenda. Some of this has got to come off of there because the most important thing we have to do is work on our annual budget that we have to review and read into the record. And so they did go ahead and pull it off, and it's supposed to be voted on October 27th
at the
work session. So, but of course, our work sessions are televised at public meetings, et cetera.
So, Marty, if I'm understanding you correctly, I just want to be really clear so the listeners understand. What you just discussed about the salary ordinance will not be voted on now until this October... What was the date?
27th.
The 27th meeting. That's when it'll be voted on?
That's when it's supposed to be voted on. And then, of course, that's a change of salary for this year. And then if that happens, then they'll reopen the salary ordinance at some point for next year and add that on for next year. Now, we have to remember this person who is sitting there having to do all these entries into this cash book from the beginning of the year, my concern is there's going to be a lot of extra hours.
Potentially a lot of mistakes. What was going on last night where every single time there was any numbers, you guys had to redo it like 17 times? Because what was going on there? And Cheryl Munson doesn't get a packet? Is that she actually asked somebody what their packet said because apparently she doesn't get a packet?
Well, I don't know what was going on that, but I will say that what happened was that the packet was changed around because I asked that several things be removed so that we were not trying to do... We were already in the meeting until 9 o'clock. Had we left everything that was on that agenda, we would have been there. We would probably still be there. Or what happens when you have too much on the agenda? It doesn't get fully vetted. people just don't aren't.
Wasn't that the key? Just shove it all in there, and hopefully no one sees what's going on, and just ram it on through.
It's just not fair. It's not fair to the public, and it's really not fair to the people trying to serve. So, yes, there were some things there. I think what a lot of this is that our council staff trying to prepare these agendas, and for whatever reason, they just have way too much on their plate right here, trying to get a very lengthy agenda together, as well as making sure we had salary ordinances ready, et cetera. And so one of the things I'm going to push hard for is that our payroll person in the auditor's office used to always do the salary ordinance for the year. Now, I understand the reason why we wouldn't want just one person to know how to do the salary ordinance. And I appreciate the way this has worked in the last couple of years, where we have contracted with folks to make sure that we have all of our budget numbers together and salary ordinances for the year put together. But I do think that if we are to increase the payroll financial rep from $32,995 up to $38,375, and that's just for this year, that we should absolutely include in that job description a responsibility to know how to put together these yearly salary ordinances and to understand how that works. And I understand we have a very competent person on there in that job now, so hopefully that wouldn't be a problem. That's something, as the auditor's liaison, I have asked to have happen. Now, speaking of the salary ordinance, you might recall there was a big brouhaha at the beginning of this year, the end of last year, was that the auditor's office suddenly decided that we were going to start giving everybody their raise 2 weeks early.
Right, I remember that.
Right. Well, so because our salary ordinance was not as clear, to make it just clear as possible, that was not the way it was supposed to be. We added a paragraph into our yearly salary ordinance that, and we rewrote it last night in the meeting, that said the work done between such and such date and such date would be paid in accordance with this 2016 salary ordinance, regardless of when the payment was issued. And so there's no more getting around that. That has to happen. That the way it has happened for decades, that if part of the salary, if your paycheck is for hours worked 1 year and the rest of it is for hours worked in another year, then it's prorated. And it's easy enough to do. They can say it's difficult, but we've had payroll departments doing it right for years. So now we have not voted on this yet. This was just read into the record. So something might change before tonight, because whatever was read into the record last night could still be amended for tonight before the final vote. As we speak, one of the more important things that we voted on last night had to do with the Veterans Affairs Office. Now, people may say, well, why do you have a Veterans Affairs Office that's suddenly going to full-time? And I want to remind folks that it used to always be full-time. Back many years ago, it was Jesse Robinson, and he was a Veterans Affairs Office, and he was also handling civil defense. So that it wasn't like he was saying, okay, from noon to 4, I'm going to do civil defense. It was like, okay, he's full-time, and he's going to do these two different jobs. Then the job was split, and we had someone else doing what was called civil defense.
Why did the job split, Marty Hawk? Did it became too busy? Did you need both of it?
That's a good question. It was just that that was part of what we were encouraged to do. But at some point along the way, the Veterans Affairs Office it became separate. Now, they used to have one office staff to be able so that they could work together, and then you didn't have to have a double office staff. Now there's a double office staff. This is how county government grows. And I understand that the services for our veterans is paramount when we're talking about what the veterans
Absolutely.
Have done for us.
Huge.
So it's my opinion that we need to make certain that there's somebody there to service our veterans when they need assistance. And it brings in so many dollars into this community because as the veterans understand how to apply for these services through the federal government, they need help getting the documents put
together. Well, you mentioned the interesting word right there, federal government. And again, this isn't about the veterans. It's about
who
pays for this.
It's a disconnect as to why this isn't something that either the federal government or the state's taking care of. I don't understand why it's a county responsibility.
Well, and I'll be happy to do more research on that. I can just say that we've had a Veterans Affairs office for the last at least 30 years. And like I said, for many years it was full-time, then it went to part-time. And now that's just not sufficient, I'm told. And I've been told by many veterans that they can't, that there's not always the assistance that they need to get there when it's just part-time. I, for one, believe that serving our veterans is
Nobody's arguing that, Margie. No one's arguing. Anybody argues that's out to lunch. That's not the issue. The issue is this the federal government throwing it in your lap? Or that's just, it seems like that help should come from everywhere, just not from the county. Maybe I've got it wrong.
Well, we'll find out.
Okay, good.
I believe, you know, I will try to get an answer.
At the very least, they should be giving you grant money or something towards this, is I guess what my thought is that, you know, no, there's not any question. We believe that these veterans deserve the assistance of a liaison, somebody to help them. There is no question about that. I just don't understand why what we're dealing with is that it is a county fiscal responsibility.
I'm sure there is an answer for you. We were told during the presentation, I think we're only like, was it either three or five counties throughout the state that didn't have a full-time Veterans Affairs office. I'll have to get that number.
Okay. Well, that's fair. Do that. Yeah, if we don't have it for you, don't have it for
you. This is something that I could look this up in the Indiana Code. I'm certain that says this is how this is, you know, how it's to be funded. So I'll find out that information for you.
Sounds good. Enjoy your meeting tonight. Kickoff is what time?
It's 5:30. That was disputed last night as well. It was like, oh, it's 5. No, it's 5:30.
Which is it? Let us know.
It's 5:30.
So anybody wants to go to the hospital?
Even though it wasn't, there were those who didn't think we had a meeting tonight. Yes, we have another meeting tonight, 5:30. Should go fairly quickly since we've already had this discussion.
And the hospital meeting tonight as well is at 5:30 at City Hall. So you can run back and forth if you need to do that.
And this will be the last meeting for Rick Dietz, who is stepping down from his slot there, and because he's moving in Bloomington, but he'll be outside of his district. So we will be looking at a new county council person.
How do you go about that process quickly?
Well, he is a Democrat, and so
caucus.
The Democrat caucus will decide who will take that spot.
Why doesn't he just wait till the end of the year? He doesn't have to leave now, does he?
Well, yes, he does, because he's moving.
The second you move, you're out?
When you move, you have to live in the area that you represent.
Gotcha.
I have lived in this house for 28 years. I'm going absolutely nowhere.
You've got an anchor dropped. I didn't know it was the second. I didn't know it was the exact day you moved out of your house.
Yeah, I don't think I realized that either, Marty.
Well, it makes sense because if you don't want to get elected in District 11 and then
move 2 days later.
Exactly right. So there's probably something in there. Marty, good job. We're out of time. Let's do it again next Wednesday. Good luck on your meeting tonight. And we'll have you back next Wednesday morning.
Thank you very much.